cares whether or not you understand?
But that's unfair, Don Juan. I want to understand everything. Otherwise, coming here would be a waste of my time.
A waste of your time!
He exclaimed, parodying my tone of voice.
You certainly are conceited.
He stood up and told me that we were going to hike to the top of the lava peak to our right. The ascent to the top was an excruciating affair. It was actual mountain climbing, except that there were no ropes to aid and protect us. Don Juan repeatedly told me not to look down, and he had to actually pull me up bodily a couple of times after I'd begun to slide down the rock. I felt terribly embarrassed that Don Juan, being so old, had to help me. I told him that I was in poor physical condition because I was too lazy to do any exercise. He replied that once one had arrived at a certain level of personal power, exercise or any training of that sort was unnecessary, since all one needed to be in an impeccable form was to engage oneself in not doing. When we arrived at the top, I lay down. I was about to be sick. He rolled me back and forth with his foot as he had done once before. Little by little, the motion restored my balance, but I felt nervous. It was as if I were somehow waiting for the sudden appearance of something. I involuntarily looked two or three times to each side. Don Juan didn't say a word, but he also looked in the direction I was looking.
"Shadows are peculiar affairs," he said all of a sudden. "You must have noticed that there's one following us."
"I haven't noticed anything of the sort," I protested in a loud voice.
Don Juan said that my body had noticed our pursuer, in spite of my stubborn opposition, and assured me in a confident tone that there was nothing unusual about being followed by a shadow.
"It's just a power," he said. "These mountains are filled with them. It's just like one of those entities that scared you the other night."
I wanted to know if I could actually perceive it myself. He asserted that in the daytime, I could only feel its presence. I wanted an explanation of why he called it a shadow, when obviously it wasn't like the shadow of a boulder. He replied that both had the same lines, therefore both were shadows. He pointed to a long boulder standing directly in front of us.
"Look at the shadow of that boulder," he said. "The shadow is the boulder, and yet it isn't. To observe the boulder in order to know what the boulder is doing, but to observe its shadow is not doing. Shadows are like doors, the doors of not doing. A man of knowledge, for example, can tell the innermost feelings of men by watching their shadows."
"Is there movement in them?" I asked.
"You may say that there's movement in them, or you may say that the lines of the world are shown in them, or you may say that feelings come from them.
But how could feelings come out of shadows, Don Juan?"
"To believe that shadows are just shadows is doing," he explained. "That belief is somehow stupid. Think about it this way. There's so much more to everything in the world that obviously there must be more to shadows, too. After all, what makes them shadows is merely our doing."
There was a long silence. I didn't know what else to say.
"The end of the day is approaching," Don Juan said, looking at the sky. "You have to use this brilliant sunlight to perform one last exercise."
He led me to a place where there were two peaks the size of a man standing parallel to each other, about 4 or 5 feet apart. Don Juan stopped 10 yards away from them, facing the west. He marked a spot for me to stand on and told me to look at the shadows of the peaks. He said that I should watch them and cross my eyes in the same manner I ordinarily cross them when scanning the ground for a place to rest. He clarified his directions by saying that when searching for a resting place, one had to look without focusing, but in observing shadows, one had to cross the eyes and yet keep a sharp image in focus. The idea was to let one shadow be superimposed on the other by crossing the eyes. He explained that through that process, one could ascertain a certain feeling which emanated from shadows. I commented on his vagueness, but he maintained that there was really no way of describing what he meant. My attempt to carry out the exercise was futile. I struggled until I got a headache. Don Juan was not at all concerned with my failure. He climbed to a dome-like peak and yelled from the top, telling me to look for two small, long, and narrow pieces of rock. He showed with his hands the size rock he wanted. I found two pieces and handed them to him. Don Juan placed each rock about a foot apart in two crevices, made me stand above them facing the west, and told me to do the same exercise with their shadows. This time, it was an altogether different affair. Almost immediately, I was capable of crossing my eyes and perceiving their individual shadows as if they had merged into one. I noticed that the act of looking without converging the images gave the single shadow I had formed an unbelievable depth and a sort of transparency. I stared at it, bewildered. Every hole in the rock on the area where my eyes were focused was neatly discernible, and the composite shadow which was superimposed on them was like a film of indescribable transparency. I didn't want to blink, for fear of losing the image I was so precariously holding. Finally, my sore eyes forced me to blink, but I didn't lose the view of the detail at all. In fact, by re-moistening my cornea, the image became even clearer. I noticed at that point that it was as if I were looking from an immeasurable height at a world I had never seen before. I also noticed that I could scan the surroundings of the shadow without losing the focus of my visual perception. Then, for an instant, I lost the notion that I was looking at a rock. I felt that I was landing in a world vast beyond anything I had ever conceived. This extraordinary perception lasted for a second, and then everything was turned off. I automatically looked up and saw Don Juan standing directly above the rocks, facing me. He had blocked the sunlight with his body. I described the unusual sensation I had had, and he explained that he had been forced to interrupt it because he saw that I was about to get lost in it. He added that it was a natural tendency for all of us to indulge ourselves when feelings of that nature occur, and that by indulging myself in it, I had almost turned not doing into my old familiar doing. He said that what I should have done was to maintain the view without succumbing to it, because in a way, doing was a manner of succumbing. I complained that he should have told me beforehand what to expect and what to do, but he pointed out that he had no way of knowing whether or not I would succeed in merging the shadows. I had to confess, I was more mystified than ever about not doing. Don Juan's comments were that I should be satisfied with what I had done, because for once I had proceeded correctly, that by reducing the world, I had enlarged it, and that, although I had been far from feeling the lines of the world, I had correctly used the shadow of the rocks as a door into not doing. The statement that I had enlarged the world by reducing it intrigued me to no end. The detail of the porous rock in the small area where my eyes were focused was so vivid and so precisely defined that the top of the round peak became a vast world for me, and yet it was really a reduced vision of the rock. When Don Juan blocked the light and I found myself looking as I normally would do, the precise detail became dull. The tiny holes in the porous rock became bigger. The brown color of the dried lava became opaque, and everything lost the shiny transparency that made the rock into a real world. Don Juan then took the two rocks, laid them gently into a deep crevice, and sat down cross-legged, facing the west, on the spot where the rocks had been. He patted a spot next to him to his left and told me to sit down. We didn't speak for a long time. Then we ate, also in silence. It was only after the sun had set that he suddenly turned and asked me about my progress in dreaming. I told him that it had been easy in the beginning, but that at the moment I had ceased altogether to find my hands in my dreams.
When you first started dreaming, you were using my personal power. That's why it was easier, he said. Now you're empty. But you must keep on trying until you have enough power of your own. You see, dreaming is the not doing of dreams. And as you progress in your not doing, you will also progress in dreaming. The trick is not to stop looking for your hands, even if you don't believe that what you're doing has any meaning. In fact, as I've told you before, a warrior doesn't need to believe, because as long as he keeps on acting without believing, he is not doing.
We looked at each other for a moment.
There's nothing else I can tell you about dreaming, he continued. Everything I may say would only be not doing. But if you tackle not doing directly, you yourself would know what to do in dreaming. To find your hands is essential, though, at this time, and I'm sure you will.
I don't know, Don Juan. I don't trust myself.
This isn't a matter of trusting anybody. This whole affair is a matter of a warrior's struggle. And you'll keep on struggling, if not under your own power, then perhaps under the impact of a worthy opponent, or with the help of some allies, like the one which is already following you.
I made a jerky, involuntary movement with my right arm. Don Juan said that my body knew much more than I suspected, because the force that had been pursuing us was to my right. He confided in a low voice that twice that day the ally had come so close to me that he had had to step in and stop it.
During the day, shadows are the doors of not doing, he said. But at night, since very little doing prevails in the dark, everything is a shadow, including the allies. I've already told you about this when I taught you the gate of power. I laughed out loud, and my own laughter scared me. Everything I've taught you so far has been an aspect of not doing, he went on. A warrior applies not doing to everything in the world. And yet, I can't tell you more about it than what I've said today. You must let your own body discover the power and the feeling of not doing.
I had another fit of nervous cackling.
It's stupid for you to scorn the mysteries of the world simply because you know the doing of scorn, he said with a serious face.
I assured him that I wasn't scorning anything or anyone, but that I was more nervous and incompetent than he thought. I've always been that way, I said. And yet I want to change, but I don't know how. I'm so inadequate.
I already know that you think you're rotten, he said. That's your doing. Now, in order to affect that doing, I'm going to recommend that you learn another doing. From now on, and for a period of 8 days, I want you to lie to yourself. Instead of telling yourself the truth that you're ugly and rotten and inadequate, you'll tell yourself that you are the complete opposite, knowing that you're lying and that you're absolutely beyond hope.
But what would be the point of lying like that, Don Juan?
It may hook you to another doing, and then you may realize that both doings are lies, unreal, and that to hinge yourself to either one is a waste of time, because the only thing that is real is the being in you that is going to die. To arrive at that being is the not doing of the self.
16. The Ring of Power. Saturday, April 14th, 1962.